Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Around 750 million people live on the European continent. So what about it? What will its future look like? Will there ever be a United States of Europe? For this and more, you will hear from European thought leaders, artists, civil society representatives, and all those who care about its future. You will receive key insights into the ways Europe is changing and how your voice can be part of this. I am Paolo De Stilo, and you're listening to Europe Matters. So today I'm joined by Dragos Cristian. He is a Romanian stand-up comedian who started his comedy journey in the wonderful country of Singapore, one of the most vibrant stand-up scenes in Asia. You gotta believe it, it's a pretty cool city to start off your career. And having done shows in Singapore, Malaysia, Hong Kong, Bangkok, Estonia, Spain, England, Czech Republic, Romania, he has now amassed an audience of over 300,000 followers. Make sure to follow him on TikTok. With a very unique style of comedy that can be described as dark but cute, he recounts with his experiences traveling all over Asia and Europe. So, Dragos, thank you for accepting this invitation. Where are you currently based at?
Oh, hey man, I'm in currently in Berlin at the moment, Germany, Berlin.
And are you doing a lot of stand-up comedy right now?
Yeah, we're doing a lot. Ever since like the lockdown has been lifted at the start of June, we've been doing a show a day, or sometimes even two shows a day here in Berlin. So basically, I haven't had the chance to have a break until yesterday. Yesterday was my first break in like 3 weeks. So we're doing a show every night.
That's incredible. So you're finally having a break after a long time of doing shows, but how was it actually during the COVID pandemic? Was it how does a comedian actually stand up during a pandemic?
Well, it was quite difficult for a lot of people because, of course, you can't do stand-up comedy in bars and online. The Zoom shows are not quite the same. People were doing Zoom shows or doing Skype shows or whatever, but it was not quite the same experience. So a lot of comedians kind of, you know, ended up refocusing. Some of them found jobs. I particularly ended up doing some writing for Comedy Central for a little YouTube program they have. And then I basically have a lot of footage because I film every set I do and I put it on this hard drive. So I ended up having like 5 terabytes of footage from the past year, from 2020, 2019. And I just spent a lot of time just editing that footage and putting it online on YouTube and TikTok and Instagram in, you know, so as to grow my social media presence.
And when did you actually start up being a stand-up comedian?
I think I started around 2016. I was in Singapore at the time. I was working for like this big tech company. And there was a scene there, you know, so one guy was like, hey, do you want to try the open mic here? And I was like, yeah, why not? And then I just gave it a go. And people were laughing. So I was like, oh, maybe there's something to this.
Can we say that it's now your full-time job?
Yeah, it's doing it mostly full-time at the moment. So I've been doing it full-time for about, I guess, 3 years, since 2019.
So you started off in Asia, right? And then you went back to, of course, Europe. How was it the difference between Asia and Europe in the sense of doing stand-up comedy? Did you have difficulties entering the various scenes, or did you find it that it was more open here in Europe, for example, or was it more difficult?
Well, I basically had to throw away most of my material because the material that I was using in Asia wasn't necessarily translating to Europe. And in Europe, I moved to Estonia. I was working for this company in Estonia, and the Estonian stand-up comedy scene, there was a scene there. They had like 2-3 open mics a week. One of them was in English a month, but then even the Estonian ones, I would go and do comedy in English, and it was all right. They were pretty receptive. But I ended up moving to Berlin because the scene in Estonia was just too small for getting better. But they were pretty chill, pretty accepting. There wasn't any drama or any kind of the sorts. You know, it's always like a small group of people. Maybe there were like 20, 30 people max that were doing stand up there. So it was quite a close knit of people.
Most of your comedy is in English, right? Or do you also do in...
All of it.
All of it is in English, right?
Yeah.
So your audience is mostly internationals, people from academia or from international big corporations? Or do you also have local people joining in your shows?
I mean, it depends. For example, if you're in a place like Berlin, there's a lot of local people as well because, you know, it being the capital, it being a very tech hub, there's a lot of people moving from like Munich, Hamburg, Cologne, Frankfurt to work, study here. There's also a lot of artists in Berlin. So there's a lot of locals as well, but it's a lot of, a lot of the people tend to be more internationally, have more of an international mindset. The Europeans a lot of times, some expats, but people with more of an international outlook on the world. And because it is in English, they tend to be, you know, because again, with English in Germany or whenever you're in Europe, you already have like a barrier to entry, a barrier of entry to enjoying the art form, right? So then people would technically need to be fluent in English. And a lot of times if they're fluent in English, then this translates to the fact that they're somewhere, you know, lower middle to upper middle class and upwards that are, you know, working in, let's say, professional jobs, maybe academia, maybe students, or, you know, obviously the younger generation is much more fluent in English. So it tends to be somewhere between like 20 to 40 in terms of year range. And yeah, mostly professional students or some form of artists.
When you started off, did you feel more Romanian or did you feel already European at the time?
Well, I do have some jokes about this as well because I started in Asia as a Romanian, right? So I think the interesting thing about being Romanian in Asia is that nobody knows what Romania is, right? So then they automatically default you to European, which was great. Because, you know, moving from Romania to other parts of Europe, they automatically default you to Romanian, European, you know what I mean? So it was an interesting perspective that they would view me as European. And then obviously I kind of started leaning into that a bit more. I started explaining to them, you know, the position of Romania within the European Union, I guess at that time, especially if it was like 2004, my time in Asia was like 2014, 2016. I started 2016. It was still about like 9 years since Romania joined the European Union. So there were still, for example, in the UK restrictions to Romanians joining and working and so on and so forth. And there were still some tensions with France, Italy. You know, there's some degree of resistance to, you know, Romanian immigration, I guess. So I was kind of using that as an analogy. So one of my jokes would be like Romania is kind of like the Mexico of Europe.
So if Romania is the Mexico of Europe, did this chance of being actually in Asia help you out to feel more comfortable in with your nationality? Or
yes, to some degree. Yeah. And then, you know, obviously there's always some like power dynamics between different countries. So for example, when I was in Singapore, they wouldn't necessarily get the Mexico of Europe analogy as well. But then I would explain Romania as being the Malaysia of Europe. And then Singaporeans kind of, you know, look down on Malaysia as it were.
Okay. So you use a lot of your personal identity in your shows, your background in Romania. Can I ask you, until when did you actually live in Romania and when did you start actually moving around?
So I was in Romania until 2007. And in 2007, I turned 18. And then I went to the UK for university. So I moved out in 2007. That's like almost 13 years now? 13 years, 14 years?
Yeah, you got lucky. You didn't have the very pricey college tuitions.
Exactly. Like I always tell people, it was like such a... So it was like the optimal period because like had it right after I finished, they tripled the fees for Europeans and then nationals, right? It went from like 2,500 a year to 12,000 or 9,000.
Oh man, bloody expensive.
Exactly. So had that been the case, I would have not been able to even entertain the idea of going to the UK, right? But it was right, you know, the right place at the right time.
So you graduated in political sciences or am I mistaken?
I did law and politics.
Law and politics. Yeah, because your comedy is also quite political. You also go into themes. You always try to pinch out hot topics from different countries. How do you manage actually going from one country to the other and pinpointing the sore point of your guest? Because the way you do your comedy is by also involving your audience, right?
Yeah. I guess we try to, like, you know, obviously you can't go too deep into the issues of a particular country, because then you have to explain and people might not be aware. So you just try to figure out what are the pieces of news that are available, you know, at like more of a macro level, like what's on the BBC, you know, what's on Euronews, like on the front page. So you don't really go too deep into the issues of a particular country. Like if you look at Poland, obviously the whole abortion thing has been like a massively publicized and massively known issue around Europe. That would be a topic I would pick on. Maybe if you look at the asparagus situation in the asparagus pickers and Germany dynamic, I don't know if you're familiar with this, but, you know, during the pandemic, there was a special exception made for travel in the European Union while there was a lockdown across the whole, you know, the whole kind of block. But the exception was for Romanian asparagus pickers to come to Germany and pick asparagus because there was no one to pick the asparagus.
Oh, my God.
Exactly, like the fuck. And obviously, there was no proper healthcare or anything of the sort provided. So, you know, try to touch on these topics. And kind of like I try to read the news as much as possible, and I get most of my news from Reddit. So then, like the Reddit Europe, Reddit Euro News, or like BBC or something of the sorts. But it's tough to find an unbiased news source nowadays.
Yeah, so Reddit is your main news source, we could say. Is how can I imagine this digital forum like area? It's what kind of news do you get? Like, is it filtered out by people that decide what to share, or do they put it in a funny way? I don't know.
Well, there's a subreddit called Reddit World News, and then people just upvote or downvote if the particular news is interesting or not. And then once you click on the article, you can read the article, whatever it is. But then the thing is, you can also go into comments and see like the discourse, right? Like what are the arguments pro, what are the arguments against? So you can kind of get a really fast summary of people's positions on this particular topic. Again, it is, there's people on the internet, so there tends to be people from both sides of the spectrum, right? Like whether they're particularly like right wings or right wing, left wing, whatever. So they tend to kind of just hash it out in the comments, sometimes civil, in a civil manner, most of the times not.
Yeah, and if we look back at the past year and a half, how do you think Europe actually has managed the whole pandemic situation?
Well, it's kind of been a bit of a, you know, one for, well, Europe as a particular unit, they've tried to kind of help as many people as possible within the European Union. And then you had the situation with the UK negotiating vaccines in their favor. And, you know, basically the UK, the European Union kind of getting left behind because the different elements of bureaucracy and everybody going on holiday when they were supposed to negotiate vaccine deals. So I just think to see how kind of that played into different kind of right-wing political ideologies, kind of like discourse, because they were like, oh, look, the European doesn't work. This is the example. The vaccines are not getting distributed. Only the rich countries are getting them, so on and so forth. But then you had a situation where, like, you know, now, like, for example, the past couple of months, Romania sold 1 million doses of the Moderna vaccine to Denmark because they were expiring, and then people in Romania no longer want to get vaccinated. So it's an interesting dynamic. But I think, if anything, you know, it's been fun to watch. Like, this was a real stress test for the European Union in the past decade. You know, obviously you had the financial crisis, which is back in 2007, 2008. But this is, I think, at that time I wasn't that tuned in into European politics. But now I think it's my first kind of like European crisis to kind of observe in real time. And yeah, I think it's still a lot of work to do, right? For example, there's the Europass where, like, you know, you can kind of show your vaccine to travel around. But like, if you look at Germany, the way that they implemented the Corona app that they have here, it's much better than they did in Romania. So there's still each country is still kind of like every man for themselves with their own capabilities, I guess. It hasn't been like centralized for maximum benefit for all the countries. Like, for example, you know, Germany, if you could scale the Germany app that we have here for Corona, because I don't know if you're familiar, you can use it to scan at the bars, it shows you what the incidence rate is, you can log your activity, and it's much better for tracking. So if you could scale this to the whole European Union, then I think we would have the whole thing under control much faster and much easier. But obviously, you know, budgetary reasons or whatever, it's probably not that possible. So you have countries like, I don't know, Bulgaria, Romania, Croatia, maybe even like the Nordic countries doing their own kind of development for this particular platform. I don't know how well that is going, so I'm blabbering on a bit, but that's kind of like how I looked at it in the past couple of weeks.
And did you manage to travel throughout this past year and a half, or did you stay stuck up in home?
So I went in May, I went to Spain to do some comedy shows there because Spain was relatively open throughout the whole pandemic. I mean, not super open, but then the bars could still stay open till 5 p.m. Throughout the whole pandemic, so they never closed. So then people could do shows in the bars. So I went there, did some shows. We were there for 2 weeks. And then in the second week, they opened shows for the evenings. So for like the until 10 p.m. So we did some shows in the evening as well. And then once we got back to Berlin, 2 weeks later, 1st of June, they opened up here as well. So that was my first travel experience so far. And at the end of August, I'm going to Malta because my parents live in Malta.
That's beautiful. So your first experience in traveling was actually in end of May, beginning of June. And how was that to actually experience firsthand the travel pass and everything? Did you find it obstructing, or did you find it all right to, as a kind of the lesser evil for surviving this pandemic?
Well, it wasn't the travel pass at the moment because I hadn't gotten vaccinated yet just because of the vaccine wasn't available. But basically, we had to get PCR tests, right? So then that effectively makes the whole... The PCR tests were more expensive than the flights because we had to pay 75 euros here in Berlin for the PCR test to go to Spain. And then from Spain, we didn't know, you had to pay 120 euros to get back to Berlin. So it ended up being like, I don't know, maybe a quarter of the cost of the whole kind of situation, the travel, and was the PCR test.
And is Britain still in your mind, or since Brexit, is it?
I'm sorry.
Is the UK still in your mind, or is it already outside of your ideals of Europe, or are you ever gonna go back there?
I mean, I'm probably gonna go back to do some shows, but I see it more as an opportunity. To be honest with you, like doing. If you look at the UK from a stand-up perspective, the scene is massive, very mature, but also very saturated with comedians, right? And on the other side of the spectrum, English stand-up comedy in Europe is like almost non-existent if you look at Berlin, right? Berlin is like probably the biggest scene. We have like 45 open mics in English and shows a week, which is great. But then the rest of the places around Europe, there's a lot of English speakers, a lot of people that consume stand-up comedy, and there's almost no scene in their cities. So I feel like it's the whole kind of European block is up for taking with regards to this particular industry, stand-up comedy in English. And I think it's much easier and much more preferred to build an audience across Europe than in the UK.
Yeah, that's quite interesting. So there is a upcoming field or area that is kind of unexplored. Do you feel like you're one of the pioneers in this area right now?
Definitely. I mean, I think I wouldn't kind of refer to myself as a pioneer, but I think now that you put it into context and you look at it from that perspective, I think I am the first person to have done like a tour around Europe of over like 70 cities of purely in Europe where I perform stand-up comedy in English. And all of this was done without any form of agent. There was no company helping me do it. It was just self-produced and self-promoted. So I think it's definitely given people something to think about with regards to like, you know, when focusing their careers on Europe or not. Of course, there's a lot of work to be done because there is no cohesive platform or even a, let's say, a TV channel for European Union in English. You know what I mean? Every country has their own basically TV channel that they promote their own local talent, but there is no platform for promoting European talent by Europe. You know what I mean? At the European level. So unless you look at the private sector, which is like YouTube or TikTok or Instagram, which is what I've been using so far, right? But I do feel like if we want to talk about like, you know, Europe matters, I think from a cohesive European culture, I don't think it's been a priority for the European Union to create like a platform for Europeans to share the content into other European countries in English. You know, there hasn't been any particular focus on that. So we have to kind of basically work with what we have and build everything from scratch.
Do you think now that the UK has left actually gives more space for the English language to play a role in Europe?
I mean, I think so. You know, whether we like it or not, there's the English is the most spoken language at the moment, I think, well, after Mandarin Chinese, right? So it is the language that we all kind of Spanish as well, of course, yeah. And I think for Europe, it makes more sense to kind of focus on building more media institutions in English, promoting more. And it's the only way we can all communicate across without any issues, right, in Europe. So I think, yeah, there's room for growth. Obviously, there's a lot of stuff you can grow into that direction. But how do you do it? I was even talking to a friend of mine, like, you know, should we apply for European funding for like some company that we're building for events? Or like, should we apply some European funding for like... maybe like for a media type of YouTube type of business promotion. But then again, even European funding, how do you find it? How do you apply it? Anything so, and even if you find it, it's boggled in documentation and paperwork, right? So it's might as well just build something from scratch in the private sector.
So would you like to build your own European Comedy Central?
I mean, I think that would be ideal, to be honest. There is a European, there's the stuff that I've been doing during the pandemic has been with Comedy Central Germany, where they are basically the what I was doing is I was writing scripts in English, and then these scripts were getting localized in Italy, in like, you know, Poland and other countries, and basically performed by local artists there. But yeah, there is no Comedy Central Europe that creates content for Europe in English or something of the sort, right? So if there was something like that, whether I want to build it or not is like, of course, I would be great. It's needed. Do I have the time to build it as opposed to like building up my own career? I don't know, but eventually, if no one's going to do it, potentially might have to do it. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like deciding how do you spend your time.
Exactly.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
So what is it for you that you've seen in the past years? What is a European identity? I know it's the big question. It's the million-dollar question that even European bureaucrats don't know to answer. What have you seen actually in the past years that makes a European European?
I think, to be honest, at the moment, if you really want to be a pure European, you have to start living in different European countries. Even if it's just like, you know, doing an Erasmus, or even if it's just going there for a couple of months or something of the sorts, I think the only way to kind of bypass the national identity supremacy, where like, you know, the French are better, the German are better, the Polish are better, whatever, is to start living in different European countries. And I don't know how that could be accomplished. I think it'd be great to have more Erasmus type projects, more maybe like, you know, how they have like the student exchange for workers exchange as well. Maybe the digital nomad European might be the one that's going to that direction. But I think, yeah, it's encouraging more people, not just travel for like 2 weeks to Berlin or 2 weeks to Barcelona, but just live there for like 6 months, maybe 7 months. And I think once you have that experience of living in different European countries, you can embrace the whole European identity much, much more wholeheartedly, right? Because you've seen how the places are, you've seen how the people react, you've seen how, let's say, they interact with you, and you become a bit more open-minded yourself, right? And I think it's not just open-minded. You have less fear of the unknown, you know?
Yeah. Are you afraid of the future?
For Europe?
Yeah.
I think you should be fine, to be honest, at the moment. Yeah, of course, we had this rough patch here with the pandemic and people kind of, you know, turning inward a bit. But I think if, let's say, this whole Delta variant kind of wraps up this year and things kind of like go well with the vaccine, I think people will start appreciating, you know, the whole freedom of movement, you know, free market thing a bit more. So I think we'll be fine. But yeah, I guess it's also like about maybe continuing the integration of the European countries within Europe, right? Because I think there is still some degree of segregation now between like Eastern Europe and Western Europe. But I think the dynamic now is a lot of talent from Eastern Europe migrates to Western Europe, which I think is good for Western Europe because it creates more dynamic societies. But for Eastern Europe, is it great? Is it not great? Does it give more room for the right-wing mentality to rise? We don't know. But hopefully we'll see how it kind of develops. I can give you an example now with Romania, for example. A lot of people have that I know personally have decided to just stay in Romania and Bucharest and not move out because the salaries are, especially in the tech sector, they've gone up significantly and it's quite comfortable to live there with your family and your friends. But again, it's still dependent. They are still working as operational people in Western startups or American startups or American companies. Do you know what I mean? They're still cogs in the machine and they haven't gotten to the point where they've created their own machines, their own innovative startups, ideas, and such.
Yeah, so for example, I saw people going working for Oracle, working actually in Romania because it's easier to live there, and then you get also good salary. And it's interesting what you point out, no? From Eastern Europe to Western Europe, and in Italy or in Spain, everybody has this idea of north and south divide. So, but not many people talk about the Eastern versus Western Europe. And I think that is an interesting conception because then it shows a little bit like how people perceive topics and ideas. No, in your case, you come from, well, we can say Eastern Europe, but maybe you're from the West for Asia, right? So
exactly Western Asia.
yeah. So that it's interesting how different perceptions change the way you see things. And you just said something that I found quite interesting, and that is the fact that people have become more introverted, or actually have gone a little bit more inwards. Did you notice that also in your stand-up comedies, that people were more felt a little bit more isolated, or not? I don't know.
Well, I think at the moment, you know, people, we've kind of gone into a point where, you know, this whole pandemic, people are kind of like afraid. Oh my God, how do I have savings? Do I have like, there's the mentality of scarcity kind of swept back in. So people have like higher appetite for risk. They're trying to be a bit more self-preservating. Is that the word? Self-preservating?
Yeah.
They're a bit more cautious of what they can do. So hopefully we'll see exactly how that, because they don't know, like there's more fear in the air and uncertainty, right? So before I think, there was more opportunity in the air before the pandemic, but now I think like, you know, people are like, okay, if I go to the UK, is there going to be a job there? They're going to kick me out. If I go to Berlin, or if I go to the Netherlands, there are going to be opportunities for me there. You know, all the companies have, you know, they've been cutting back because of the pandemic. So there's a bit of uncertainty in the air, I think. And I think that might kind of like make people a bit more, again, reluctant to take risk or interact with new elements in their environment as they would have done before, because they're like a bit cautious. Oh, what if this person's bringing, if this person's traveling from outside, or if they're bringing Corona, or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it hasn't necessarily been as present in the stand-up comedy scene, but like I'm just looking at the overall kind of environment. You know, being locked up for like so many months in your own house, you kind of tend to, you know, start building doomsday scenarios, and you start to think that everyone's after you. And I've had some interactions like this on TikTok with people leaving comments about like, you know, my country's the best, my, you know, kind of like seeking that safety of their own little nest, trying to, you know, create a little validation for like, oh, actually, because, you know, Greece is doing better than other countries and with the corona, so we're warmer, so we don't want people to kind of come here and bring the virus or whatever. But that's kind of been my interaction with it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And do you notice that maybe your kind of comedy, which is quite dark, resonates more with people in this current period?
I mean, it kind of helps people release a bit of tension, I guess. And yeah, it's kind of like it's a bit therapeutical as well, because you can kind of talk about terrible things that have happened and then laugh a bit at them now. Because if you can laugh at them, it means you're processing them and you're healing from the trauma. Like I had some jokes about how the Italians, the way that they greet each other is by kissing each other on the cheek, right? Like mwah mwah. And it's like, yeah. I wonder why they had such a hard time at the start of the pandemic, right? you know what I mean? It's like this kind of stuff. So they're like, yeah, of course, cultures that are warmer suffered more from the pandemic at the start. You know, Spain, Italy.
Yeah, it was dramatic, man. It was awful.
yeah, very intense. And, you know, again, it's traumatic. People have, like, I personally don't know a lot of people that have died from coronavirus, but, you know, I have people at the shows and ask them, and they're like, yeah, you know, my grandpa died of coronavirus and we couldn't go to the funeral, so we do the Zoom wake for him.
Yeah.
Which is like not, it's also funny, but also like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like they were all gathered around the computers to look at the corpse. So what the fuck? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And did you have a virtual cake then for the funeral then?
I mean, I didn't have any deaths in my family, but I'm assuming that they all of my particular grandparents they've already been dealt with by cancer like a couple of years ago, so they did hang around to chill with Corona. But I'm assuming families that did have that, they probably did have like the virtual the Corona cake, the Romanian coliva is called.
How was it the coliva? How was it called?
Coliva, yeah, it's an Orthodox cake. They have it in Greece as well, coliva.
Now we're talking about death. Death is something very that has actually permeated our news a lot lately, right? And I think so. What you're doing is a way of lightening it up, but also giving it a room space, because otherwise people didn't find that space because it was too depressing, right?
Yeah, and you know, that's the thing is, like, people are trying to find stuff online, and you know, online on that. Maybe this is why, like, this whole, I was just talking to a friend of mine yesterday, like, this whole new wave of content on Netflix is trash. And it's like just like very superficial, because I think people need to kind of disconnect a bit, right? And they just need to forget about like too intense topic or too. That's why you have like all these reality shows about dating and stuff. People just want to like escape, right? Escapism is a big thing now.
Will you go into that kind of world, or will you try to stay up your ground?
No, I think I'm good. I'm gonna do my national anthem reviews on YouTube. That's what I'm gonna do. All random nonsense on YouTube. Like, I'll create my own trash content.
And okay, yeah, what you're just pointing out, not the trash. That's also a phenomenon that we see in the internet. There's a lot of. There's always been trash everywhere. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's now more?
There's definitely more, because people feel more emboldened to create it. You know, it's that whole idea. I was like, what the fuck? People like this, that I can make something shitty like this, right? So, like, I think that if the barrier for quality is not that high, then it seems like the barrier for entry is lower, right? So people are like, oh, okay, I can also create this little shitty. And that's how I started a YouTube channel, because I started a YouTube channel during the pandemic, and I was looking at some other people that are just reacting to videos, and I was like, what the fuck? This is not even entertaining, but people are watching this and it's getting views. I can do something just as shitty and get just as many views. And you know what? It worked.
So you have a big audience on TikTok and on YouTube as well, yeah. Or is it the bigger one on TikTok?
I think TikTok is about 330,000, and I think the discovery mechanism is great on TikTok. It's some next level. It's really, you can go there with no following anywhere on any platform, and then if your content is entertaining, you can get a following. Whereas YouTube is more still tied to the Google way of discovery, which is SEO, and people have to be searching for something that you do, which means that you can't. For example, if I were to put my stand-up on YouTube, nobody would find it, because nobody gives a shit about, nobody's searching for Dragos comedy, especially if no one knows me, right? But so that's why, for example, the content that I do on YouTube has to be optimized for search engine, which is that I'm doing like National Anthem of Italy reaction or whatever, you know, because I'm thinking people will search for this at least once a year.
Yeah,
so you have to go at it with more strategy. So on YouTube, I've got about like almost 12,000 followers, but on TikTok is 330, because that's just organic. People are sharing the videos, they're discovering it, and so on and so forth. So it's different discovery mechanisms. And I think, yeah, TikTok has been quite good for getting me more discovery and more exposure. And yeah, people coming from the shows as well to TikTok. And it's been quite good.
Yeah, so all these platforms, they all have one thing in common. They're not from Europe, or from China, or they're from the USA.
Yes.
So we already discussed that a little bit earlier on whether we should have a European media landscape. Do you think that a European media landscape with maybe one platform that could unite the various national platforms or stuff like that, can that be a first step towards a United States of Europe?
100%. Because like at the moment, you know, all this content, this is one of my issues that I have with like all these platforms as well. Like, you know, for example, like stand-up comedy from the US, a lot of Europeans follow stand-up comedy from the US just because that's the only one available. And if you look at stand-up comedy from the US, for a European, it feels like secondhand comedy, right? Because it's not made for you. It doesn't talk about topics that are relevant to you. It talks about going to Wendy's. Where the fuck do we have a Wendy's in Europe? You know what I mean? You know, so it's like, yeah. It's so disconnected from the European experience. But then again, in order to create content for Europe, you have to create it in English. And English is everyone's second language in Europe. So in that context, basically, you have to, there is a strong, you know, barrier to kind of creating content in English, because first you have to feel confident enough to speak English. You have to speak it every day. And how are you going to speak it every day if you live in France, right? Or if you live even in the Netherlands, which is one of the highest English speakers in Europe, right? People are still not super confident to create content in English. So you need to kind of show people that, look, we can make content in English and it can be consumed by people in Sweden, people in Bulgaria, whatever, right? But there is no program or there is no platform to do that. And I think if you have a bit more of a structure for it to show people that it can be done, then more and more people are going to create content in English, and it is going to lead to that direction where you have a more cohesive European Union.
And is your audience also European, or is it more American or Asian?
Well, I can give you the statistics at the moment on my Instagram, on my TikTok. It's quite diverse, actually. I'm looking at the breakdown now. So like 18% of my audience on TikTok out of this 330,000 people, 18% are from Romania. And that makes sense, right? Because I'm from Romania. Then the next top one, 10% are from Indonesia.
Oh,
if you can believe it. Because I've done some jokes about Indonesia and some of them went viral there. Then 8% are from the United States. And then afterwards, you have 6% from Germany, 5% from Italy. Then I have another 5% from Malaysia. And then it goes down like with different percentages for different countries in Europe.
Okay, so for our listeners, there's a big audience waiting for you if you want to start up something in the media landscape. Doesn't need to be competition with Dragos, but something.
Yeah, 100%. I think there's enough space for everybody.
Yeah. What I said before now about United States of Europe, do you believe in that kind of idea, or do you think it's too American in the way of putting it?
I mean, I do think it's quite possible, and I think it's quite a good way to go. As if you look at Europe, there's so many different cultures, different architecture styles, different ways of thinking, and I think in that context it does make sense, and I think it is the right way to go, because just you can kind of mix it together, all these nationalities, and get something really cool. You get a lot of nice mixes. If you look at the US, a lot of the, you know, especially like the East Coast, a lot of the East Coast identity is basically, oh, I am Italian American, I am Irish American, you know, I'm Greek American. There's a lot of these fragments of Europe kind of left in there, and that kind of have helped it stick together with some different form of identities and different form of characteristics in that idea. And it kind of acted as their strength and as their fallback for different kind of, you know, like personalized opinions and attributes, right? So, for example, in Europe, you have the actual Europeans, you know, the Swedish, the Romanian, the Bulgarian, the French, the Portuguese. So if you can kind of get all these different mindsets to work together, people can really cover each other's blank spots, right? And you can create more innovation, you can create more stuff. You just have to kind of get them all together and, you know, get them to play around.
Wow, that was quite deep for of a conversation as well. We went pretty into a lot of different topics. We looked at a European media landscape. We looked at how comedy can work across borders, how people dealt with death in the past year and a half during this whole pandemic, and how people react to Drago's comedy. And And before we leave our audience, Dragos, where can our listeners follow you, and how can they find you?
You can find me at Dragos Comedy everywhere. So Dragos Comedy, Comedy, Dragos Comedy on Instagram, on Facebook, on YouTube, on TikTok, everywhere. Follow me everywhere. Send me messages. Send me nudes.
Make sure to follow him. And thank you all very much for listening to this Europe Matters podcast.
Thanks a lot, guys. Have a nice one.
Thank you all for listening to this episode of Europe Matters. Special thanks goes to my assistant producer, Antonio Mattesini. Let us know who we should interview next by writing a comment and sharing it with your friends on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, or LinkedIn using the handle at Europe Matters. Don't forget to leave a review on whichever podcast streaming platform you use. And if you really like this show, the best way to support us is by making a donation on patreon.com. You can learn more at www.europematters.com. Speak to you soon.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.